Hey, Truth Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome to tonight's program. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for tuning in. We just got word about Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn's involvement in the cover-up of the Senator John Ensign sex scandal and bribery case. The report by Senate Democrat and Republican Johnny Isaacson from here in Georgia, and who is the Democrat? The report shows that the great family values hypocrite Oklahoma Senator Tom Coburn is as much of a con artist and liar as every other Republican. According to Huffington Post, Tom Coburn played a more active role than previously known in the negotiations between ex-Senator John Ensign and his former aide, Doug Hampton, whose wife, Ensign, was boinking and then tried to pay the family off to keep it quiet because, you know, they're such good family values Christians. The extent of Coburn's involvement is made clear in the report released Thursday by the Senate Ethics Committee that accuses Ensign of serious criminal violations, not civil, criminal. Now, you know, Ensign resigned from the Senate earlier this month, about a day before this report was going to be made public. And, you know, he admitted to having an affair with his little honey, Cynthia Hampton, wife of his former aide, and during a two-year inquiry into whatever violations Ensign committed, Senate Ethics Committee found that not only did he violate campaign finance laws and got involved in a cover-up, but also Tom Coburn was involved as an intermediary in negotiations between Ensign and Doug Hampton. In other words, Tom Coburn handled the hush money. Son of a bitch, can you believe this? Of course you can. These are Republicans. These are Republicans. Coburn negotiated the payment to Doug Hampton down from $8 million. That's how much Hampton wanted. He wanted $8 million. You're going to have sex with my wife? $8 million. Jesus Christ. I mean, you know, somebody established that she'll do it for money. It's just a matter of how much. I guess she had to, or her pimp had to get involved. Who was her pimp? Not her husband. Her husband's just a jerk. Tom Coburn. My God. Negotiated it down to about $2.8 million, according to the report. I love the way Huffington Post puts this. The Oklahoma Republicans' involvement in the cover-up of the affair could lead to uncomfortable questions for the senator and his party going forward. Really? You think? What was this about, a $93,000 payoff that Ensign's parents tried to make or did make? That was apparently the cover story. I'm not going to get too far into this because I haven't read the full report yet. This just came to me, and it's at Huffington Post. According to the report, Daniel Albrecht, I guess, that's Hampton's attorney. That's the cuckold's attorney, Albrecht. According to the report, Albrecht, the attorney, called Coburn. The lawyer told Coburn that the cuckold had proposed $8 million to resettle his family and find a new job. The cuckold's attorney told the ethics committee that Coburn counteroffered, calling the $8 million figure absolutely ridiculous. Instead, Coburn reportedly said the Ensigns should purchase the Hamptons' home and give them some money to live off while they look for new jobs. In a third call, the cuckold's attorney proposed payments for the Hamptons of $1.2 million for their home and $1.6 million for relocation. During that five-minute call, Coburn said he thought that was reasonable and that he would take the request to Ensign. Of course, Ensign refused to pay that. Coburn, when he testified about this report, said, "No, a negotiator? No, I didn't do that." But he acknowledged he spoke to Hampton's attorney, Albrecht's. For what? Oh, I see. Coburn said to the ethics committee that he was simply planning to pass along information to Ensign. "Ah, no, I wasn't negotiating anything. I don't have anything to do with it. No, no, not me. Wow, what are you talking about?" Now, Ensign, of course, Coburn was one of the men to confront the other senator, Ensign, about ending his affair with the cuckold's wife. According to the report, Coburn, along with C Street Christian Fellowship's evangelical leaders Tim Coe, David Coe, and Marty Sherman, talked to Ensign and Doug Hampton at their group house on February 14, 2008. Blah, 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 blah. All these people are involved with the family, a Christian cult that the C Street house is affiliated with. It just goes on and on and on. Coburn staged a second intervention for Ensign about a month after the February 14th talks. I'm going to read a little bit more. I really don't care about this kind of garbage, you know, Republican slop bucket crap. You know, this is the only reason I do is because it so thoroughly demonstrates the massive hypocrisy, deceit, and lies that these Christ murdering Christians involve themselves in all the time. You bunch of swine. Now, the honorable thing, come on, Malloy, you're talking about Republicans. I know. The honorable thing, of course, would be for Tom Coburn to resign and take his ass back to Oklahoma and, I don't know, do whatever he was doing. Isn't he a OBGYN or something? He's a doctor, I think. I think he's a doctor who tries to deny women health care services unless they, I don't want to go there. You know, it's a whole different scandal, I guess. I don't know. But Tom Coburn, if he had any honor, would get his ass out of the Senate. He would just align himself, as he has, with John Ensign and say, "Yeah, we're both a couple of pimps. We're both a couple of hypocritical Christian right-wing Christ-murdering pimps. Here we are. You don't like it? Bite us." Isn't that what they usually say? My. It just never stops, does it? Hey, this hour is sponsored by Bill the Bowling Machine Mechanic from Minnesota. Hi, Bill. Bill Bachman, he says, "Remember, you talked one night about setting pins for 10 cents a line?" Yeah, I did. "We need your voice now more than ever." Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. We appreciate it very much. Yeah, I remember that. Remember that night, Kathy? He got in a conversation with this guy. He called in. I think it was when I was working for Air America. He said he was a bowling machine mechanic, a pin-setting machine mechanic. I said, "Oh, my God, you know, I used to set pins 10 cents a line." I still have some bruises to show for it, too. Oh, my goodness sakes. Coburn is a physician, isn't he? I think he is. Yeah. Yeah, he's a physician. In addition to that's his day job. His night job, apparently, he's a pimp. It's hot out there for a pimp. We'll be right back. You know it's hard out here for a pimp. When he tryna get his money for the rent. Ain't no. For the Cadillac and gas money spent. Ain't no.
live, but this is how it is. It might be new to you, but it's...
Redefining anger management. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. By the way, I want to send a shout out to a woman who has been running a thread at Democratic Underground for this program. The Malloy program for, oh my God, how long, Kathy? Years. Years. And, she had a birthday the other day and, I forgot. And she, her Democratic Underground name is Ralps. R-A-L-P-S, Ralps. She's a cat lover. And she posts a thread every night, and without her efforts, there wouldn't have been a Democratic Underground thread. It's been up. She's been doing this, I'm trying to think, 7, 8 years? I mean, it just seems like forever. Back in the day when Democratic Underground's forums were about, you know, one of the few places you could go to post comments and talk about stuff. And, they still have a very active online community there. DemocraticUnderground.com. So to Ralps, thank you. Happy birthday, and thank you for all the years that you've been doing this. I really appreciate it. I don't know how many people were introduced to my program through her efforts, so... Thanks a lot, Ralps. Okay, let me see what else we got here. Oh yeah, the John Ensign and Tom Coburn thing. It's beyond icky. I mean, and then when you think about Newt Gingrich and all these freaks who just I don't know. It's not the fact that they cheat on their spouses and they lie and they sneak and deceive people. That's something that they can work out with their spouses and their therapists and their phony ass religions and deceiving their children and their lie. You know, they can handle that or not handle it within the strictures of their own marriage. The thing that bothers me is their filthy hypocrisy. Every single Republican is a hypocrite. I've said that so many times. They're hypocrites, they're liars, they're cowards, but mostly they're hypocrites. And the proof just keeps bubbling up. I've got something for you about Newt Gingrich that is is going to, you know, Newt Gingrich has gone completely over to the dark side. This guy has become some kind of, I don't know, his weird body has been taken over by some alien force. It's just astonishing. Newt, who could never keep his zipper zipped, who was borderline agnostic, who I don't know how to describe him. I mean, you know, more or less know about this freak. He's the one who Sean Hannity rode hard to get where he's at, Hannity, and Newt was happy to have Sean ride him at a time when Newt was under an awful lot of pressure. Hannity was working a local radio station in the Atlanta area, and Hannity did for Newt what Monica did for Bill Clinton. And, well, not quite, because what's her name? Callista was doing for Newt what Monica was doing for Bill Clinton. Oh, it gets so complicated with these Republican freaks, doesn't it? But Newt is just such a pig. I mean, he's such a pig. This pseudo, he thinks he's Napoleon. I don't know, maybe he thinks he's Jesus. It's just astonishing, this little twerp, or Nixon, or Kissinger, somebody. Oh, I'm an historian. Oh, I'm a college professor. Oh, I'm an intellectual. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Newt Gingrich is so 1990s. Go away, you pudgy throwback to a... But that's not the story. That's not the story that I've got for you. It's just Gingrich, because he's from here. He's from this part of the woods down here. Not actually. I think he's originally from Iowa. But, you know, he spent so much time here, was a congressman from here, was a college professor at Carrollton College, is now University of West Georgia. It was West Georgia College. Now it's the University of West Georgia. But he has this opinion of himself that is just astonishing. He's never had the charisma beyond that of a you know, badly encased sausage, frankly. He always wanted to be a Bill Clinton. He wanted to be Ronald Reagan. He wanted to be somebody that was good looking, and or intelligent, and or popular. He was a kid that always got pantsed when he went to elementary or middle school. They were always pulling his drawers down and you know, making him expose his little pimply butt. And it just stuck with him all these years. He's really out of his mind. But he's gone over to the dark side, and I'll show you when we come back.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
My name is Luca. I live on the second floor. I live upstairs from you.
25 before the hour. This hour is sponsored by Bill the Bowling Machine Mechanic from Minnesota. Bill Bachman. Thanks, Bill. He writes, we need your voice now more than ever. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. Newt Gingrich. I've been watching, first of all, the sorry bastards who represent the leadership of the Republican Party and these teabag freaks, how they all went stark raving mad about Barack Obama's attempt to give the insurance, the health insurance industry, a huge gift last year, which eventually the Congress did. Back in, what was it, 09? Gosh, everything just kind of runs together after a while. Barack Obama, there were a couple of good things in Barack Obama's plan, and it wasn't really his plan, it was the Democrats' plan. There were a couple of good things in there, but essentially, bottom line, it was a huge handoff to the health insurance industry. And while Republicans, who are dumber than dog droppings, ran around with their mouths open talking about, oh, it's socialism, oh, it's government control, Medicaid, doctor, blah, blah, all this garbage that, you know, that Grover Norquist had insisted that it be framed a certain way. Government-controlled health care. That was the framing. And, of course, it was nothing of the sort, but our whorish lapdog media, no offense to sex workers or dogs, took up the meme, the framing, and ran with it. So all these halfwits show up at the town hall meetings a year ago, or whenever it was, and screaming and frothing at the mouth like half-witted Republicans are wont to do. Okay. So now here we are later, everybody gearing up for the 2012 presidential race, and two people who were deeply supportive of some of the ideas in the Health Reform Act, Mitt Romney and, ding ding, Newt Gingrich, are now trying to backpedal like crazy. It's fun watching Mitt Romney, you know, who said, well, no, I only meant we should do this in Massachusetts. I didn't mean that everybody in the country should have what we have in Massachusetts. No, just kidding. Well, what about Newt? At the Huffington Post again, they just had some winners today. It says Romney is far from being the potential 2012 Republican presidential contender with the most politically problematic record on health care. That would be Newt Gingrich. After he fled Congress, because he was about to go through, well, he eventually did go through, and it was shamed, a typical Republican. He became a vocal champion for mandated insurance coverage. That's part of the health reform plan that kicks in when? In 2013, 2014 or something? That's the very provision of Obama's health care legislation that the Republican Party now declares as fundamentally unconstitutional. Oh, the framers of the Constitution never meant this. No, that's right. The framers of the Constitution had slaves, too, you halfwits. But anyway, the mandate for insurance coverage, a mandate is you got to do it, was hardly some little discussed aspect of Gingrich's plan for health care reform. In the mid-2000s, he partnered with then-Senator Hillary Clinton to promote what is laughingly referred to, laughingly by me, a centrist solution to fixing the nation's health care system. A July 22, 2005 hotline article on one of the duo's events, Clinton and Gingrich, described Gingrich as endorsing not just state-based mandates, which is the linchpin of Romney's Massachusetts law, but, quote, some federal mandates, end quote, as well. Ooh, federal mandates. A New York Sun newspaper, that was a now defunct right-wing newspaper that thought they were going to take on the Times. A New York Sun write-up back then of what appears to be the same event noted that, quote, both politicians appeared to endorse proposals to require all individuals to have some form of health coverage, end quote. Oh, Newt, you anti-constitutionalist hypocrite, you! Neera Tanden, who was an aide to Clinton at the time, said that both Clinton and Gingrich backed the mandate idea. Now, you can do a simple newspaper archive search, which is what Huffington Post did, and you find all the proof of this you want. At a health event in Omaha in 2008, Newt Gingrich said it was, quote, fundamentally immoral, end quote, for a person to go without health care coverage, and then show up in an emergency room and demand free care. Fundamentally immoral. At a speech at the Greater Detroit Area Health Council annual Health Trends Conference in April 2006, Gingrich said he would require Americans earning above a certain income level to buy health insurance or post a bond. What? That sounds like, let me think. Socialism! Newt Gingrich said he would require Americans earning above a certain income level. Well, that's class warfare, Newt. Oh, Newty, what are you doing? Americans above a certain income level to buy health insurance or post a bond. Now, that was in the Detroit Free Press. In June 2007, in an op-ed in the Des Moines Register, Newt Gingrich wrote, quote, personal responsibility extends to the purchase of health insurance. Citizens should not be able to cheat their neighbors by not buying insurance, particularly when they can afford it, and expect others to pay for their care when they need it, end quote. He added, an individual mandate should be applied, quote, when the larger healthcare system has been fundamentally changed, end quote. Mandates. Orders. Why? That's social. No, that's communism. Communism! So not only is he a serial adulterer and a hypocrite, he's a communist! Oh my God, a communist! And I have never seen a copy of his birth certificate. Have you? Was he born in this country? Where is Newt Gingrich from? What kind of a name is Gingrich? Gingrich, what is that? Newt! That's a lizard! That's not his name! Where's this guy from? I want to see his birth certificate. I want to see who signed it. In one of his books, in 2008, his book, Real Change, he wrote, quote, "Finally, we should insist that everyone above a certain income level buy coverage. Or, if they are opposed to insurance, post a bond. Meanwhile, we should provide tax credits or subsidized private insurance for the poor," end quote. What? Subsidized private insurance for the poor? OMFG! That's socialism. Newt! You're a commie! Who'da thunk it? Oh my God! Newt! Newtster, what are you gonna do? Sarah Palin is going to cut him off and hand him to you, buddy! What are you going to do now? In his book in 2005, Winning the Future, he expanded on the idea in more detail. He wrote, quote, "You have the right to be part of the lowest cost insurance pool, and you have a responsibility to buy insurance. We need significant changes to ensure that every American is insured, but we should make it clear that a 21st century intelligent system requires everyone to participate in the insurance system." He continued, "People whose income is too low should receive vouchers and tax credits to buy insurance. Large risk pools should be established so low-income people can buy insurance as inexpensively as large corporations." What? What? He went on, "Furthermore, it should be possible to buy your health insurance online to lower the cost as much as possible." Low-income people should be able to buy insurance as inexpensively as large corporations. OMFG squared! And it wasn't just insurance coverage mandates that Gingrich supported. According to a July 21st, 2005, Gannett News Service article, Gingrich also said that he would have Congress mandate physical education 5 days a week for all elementary and high school pupils. What?! Forced PE? Well, that sounds like Michelle Obama. Oh, my God. Now, Gingrich joined his Republican colleagues criticizing the work of Obama, calling the Affordable Care Act madness and indefensible. But Newt is pretty much in keeping with what you insisted. Ah, what's next, Newt? Do away with cookies and make the little brats eat broccoli, right?
Why promises are snapped in two, words are meant to bend.
It's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Bill Bachman, the bowling machine mechanic from Minnesota. And he writes, "We need your voice now more than ever." Thanks, Bill. Thanks for the sponsorship. I appreciate it. Newt Gingrich, more supportive of individual mandates where it concerns health insurance than Mitt Romney. How's he going to explain all this? Congress should pass a law demanding PE 5 days a week for all elementary and high school pupils as a way of combating obesity and diabetes. Well, I happen to be in favor of that, but I am a socialist. I am a democratic and economic socialist. You bet you're Bippy, but Newtster? Well, he is too. Unless he's running for president. And then he's a proper God-fearing Catholic who, you know, became God-fearing once the woman he was boinking when he was married to someone else convinced him that because she had such a beautiful voice, she sang in the choir, that Newt finally used that as the catalyst of all things to convert to Catholicism. Oh, boy. It's just, aren't Republicans a zoo? Every single one of them. And now we find out that Tom Coburn was in the John Ensign boink his AIDS wife episode. Coburn was in it up to his eyeballs. And that whole family religious cult over on C Street or P Street or J Street, whatever the hell it is, that nest of Christian cultists who helped, is it Uganda, get a law before their legislature to execute gay people? Oh my God. Tom Coburn. John Ensign, Newt Gingrich, Sarah Palin, Donald Trump, Mitt Romney, funny man Huckabee, woohoo, Ron Paul. Look, you know, I figure this country is lost to corporatism anyway, so come November 2012, I just for the sheer hell of it, I may vote for Obama again, just to add one more vote to this monstrous wipeout he's going to do to the Republicans. Okay, maybe not. My God. David writes, if Jesus returns on May 21st, like everyone is saying he will, and starts promoting social justice, the Republican Teabagger Party will paint him as a socialist Marxist out to destroy the U.S. Of course. Of course. It is just, I mean, I want to get to the oil companies that testified today asking for more welfare. These filthy, filthy pigs. As it, Senator Chuck Schumer asked the head of ExxonMobil, do you think you should continue to get your tax subsidies? Or do you think that the money, the $21 that you're sucking out of the American taxpayer's pocket while you're charging them $4 a gallon for gasoline, do you think that should go maybe for education, children's health care? And this filthy capitalist pig sat there, and his answer made it very clear that he wants the money. Well, of course! How many times have I said on this program to my 37 listeners, and how many times have they said to me something that everybody really knows if you still have a brain left? These capitalists don't care. They don't care about your family, your kids, your mama, your granny, your auntie. They don't care about any of you. And they love to see you brain-dead Republicans continue to vote in their butt boys into Congress. So the hearings like that occurred today with the five oil company CEOs sitting there, those kinds of hearings are soon going to be a thing of the past. Because when corporate capitalist America completely takes over, I mean really, you're never going to see a hearing like that again. But there they sat, just like the tobacco company executives. There they sat, Rex Tillerson. He called the proposed tax changes, where these filthy predators would lose their tax subsidies paid for by the American public, he called that misinformed and discriminatory, as well as counterproductive. And then he said, quote, by undermining U.S. competitiveness, the people supporting this would discourage future investment in energy projects and therefore undercut job creation and economic growth. Isn't that what they always say? There they sat, BP, ExxonMobil, Shell, Chevron, ConocoPhillips, predators, vampires, liars, thieves. They would steal your socks without removing your shoes. Scum. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Seekers, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of the Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say Bush crime family.
I can hear the word that you're saying. I can see the love light in your eyes. What's the use in looking for an answer? I might find out it could be a disaster.
The Malloy Show, 7 past the hour. I'm just not sure where to go next. Let's do this one first. The FCC Commissioner Meredith Atwell Baker is leaving the FCC to become a lobbyist for Comcast. Just 4 months after she voted as an FCC commissioner to approve the Comcast takeover of NBC. Oh, my God! And we wonder why you and I, not these dumbass Republicans, we wonder why people like you, people like me, and normal people, why we are, disgusted with Washington is not really the way to put it. Cognizant of the fact that we now live in a corporatocracy or a fascist state or in a country where capitalism makes all the decisions. They don't make decisions about who to fire and what companies to move to China. That is so last century. They make all the decisions where we will go to war, what company or what countries we will invade and occupy, how much death of American soldiers the public will tolerate, how many times we will get a headline talking about a missile strike in one of these countries where civilians are wiped out and still sit on our asses and not say anything. Capitalist America makes all the decisions now. Including whether or not Meredith Atwell Baker gets to leave the FCC after voting for the Comcast NBC takeover and becoming a lobbyist for Comcast. Remember the guy who voted, who is the piece of human waste? Some southern politician. Oh, God, I'm drawing a blank. There's so many of these scummy, scummy Republicans. He voted for the, or he led the effort during the Bush years to the unfunded, was it the prescription drug? I think it was. Prescription drug benefit, quote, quote, for seniors, for people on Medicare. Of course, it was unfunded. But he was the one that led the effort to make sure that Social Security Administration could not negotiate the price. They had to accept what the pharmaceutical industry said they would sell it to Social Security Administration for. And then he left and went to work as a lobbyist for the pharmaceutical industry. Cockroaches! If I only worked on satellite radio, the second and third syllables of that word would be entirely different from roaches. You get my drift? FCC. Republican. Well, of course she's a Republican. I don't know how much information you want. Billy Tawson. That was it. Thanks, Irish Dave. Billy Tawson. Meredith Atwell Baker started on the FCC July 31st, 2009. So she wasn't even there 2 years. She was appointed by Barack Obama. She was unanimously confirmed by the Senate. Obama. Anybody want to comment on that? Barack Obama. 4 months after being one of the commissioners to approve the merger of Comcast and NBC Universal, Ms. Baker accepted a job with Comcast to oversee its government affairs office beginning June 3rd. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. But you know what we'll do about it? You and me and the rest of America? Nothing. Oh, by the way, she is also in favor of ending or working against net neutrality. She wants two or three highways on the internet, you know, for the rich people that you and I can't get to, the corporations that you and I might get to if we're good little slaves, and then, you know, the rest of it for us, I guess. Oh, by the way, Meredith Atwell's Baker's father-in-law is James Baker, the guy who argued before, or no, he led the campaign to get the Supreme Court to appoint George W. Bush. See how tight these circles are? See how tight they are? oh, my God. Her great-great-grandfather was an ambassador from Texas to the United States when Texas was a republic. Her father was a former past president of Lincoln Liberty Life Insurance. I mean, this woman has a very big Texas pedigree. I mean, her family is woohoo. Yes, sir. Absolutely. You betcha. So just another example of and Barack Obama, of course. Good old liberal progressive Barack Obama appointed her or nominated her. She had to be confirmed. Good God. The Big Five oil companies in the first quarter of this year raked in $32 billion in profit, not in sales, in profit, $32 billion. But they and the Republican whores, no offense to sex workers, in Congress say the oil companies need taxpayer subsidies. They got to keep having the subsidies. If they don't have the subsidies, well, what are you going to do, boys? Move your refineries to China? Huh? Rex Tillerson, CEO of ExxonMobil, sitting there on his amply padded ass in front of the senators, most of whom are owned outright by Capitalist America. I don't know what the theater is about. The questions sounded like they were coming from the Democrats, sounded like they were coming from people who are not owned outright by Capitalist America, which I guess is just part of the game. That's so those of us sitting at home will go, hey, go, Chuck Schumer. Yeah, go, Chuck Schumer. Okay, go. He said that the proposed tax changes, taking away the subsidies that these capitalist predators now get from you and me, right out of our pockets. And the funny part comes right out of teabaggers' pockets, too. But they don't care. You know, they're too stupid to care. But he called the proposed changes misinformed and discriminatory, as well as counterproductive. He said it would undermine U.S. competitiveness. What the hell are you talking? Competitiveness where? On the oil futures market? Are you kidding? No, he's not kidding. They use words like that because they know that the teabaggers and the bobbleheads and the Republicans and the dumbasses will sit there and go, yeah, see, Barack Obama's a socialist, and he wants to destroy U.S. competitiveness. Senators Robert Menendez of New Jersey, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, and Claire McCaskill of Missouri have a proposal to end tax subsidies for five oil companies. Now, of course, they call this a tax increase. Of course. Just like ending the Bush tax cuts for the billionaires would be a tax increase. Of course it would. Sure it would. More on this when we come back. This is just, it's driving me into hysterical peals of laughter. We'll be right back.
Come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, yes, it is 21 past the hour. So anyway, three senators, Robert Menendez of New Jersey, Sherrod Brown of Ohio, Claire McCaskill of Missouri, all Democrats, would like these predatory capitalists in the oil industry to give up their subsidies that they don't need. I mean, the bastards, between the crowd of them, what did I say? They made 36 billion in or 43 billion or trillion or quadrillion or quintillion, all these, you know, all this money. And the price of at the pump just keeps going up and up and up, of course. But apparently, here it is. $32 billion in 3 months. 3 months. Menendez, Robert Menendez, New Jersey, said earlier this week that, quote, we simply can't afford to keep giving away billions in taxpayer handouts to oil companies that are doing nothing to help lower prices. Why are we subsidizing the oil industry? Come on, you right-wing teabag halfwits. Have you got an... Oh, never mind. I was going to say you have an answer to that. You couldn't find your asses with both hands. You don't have an answer to anything except this. He's from Kenya! So a group of Democrats from the Finance Committee, where these hearings were held today, I guess, they wrote a letter to the oil executives earlier this week, urging them to just go ahead on their own and renounce the subsidies. Just, you know, all right, guys, here's what you need to do. Just stop taking money from the taxpayers. You don't need it. You're making billions upon billions of dollars for your rapacious pockets, in addition to the fact that you're murdering the planet. You are murdering the planet. You're polluting everything you touch. Unilaterally renouncing the subsidies seemed an action that was going to be very unlikely, right? The letter said, quote, we urge you to take this opportunity to publicly admit that given your company's prodigious profits, you no longer need taxpayer subsidies. Now, the ranking Republican on the committee, Senator Orrin Hatch of Utah. In the first place, see, there wouldn't be a Senate hearing if the Republicans had the Senate. None of this nonsense. That's why I say this will probably be one of the last times that you'll see this kind of theater. But Senator Orrin Hatch said that the Democrats were playing a cynical game in asking the oil companies to back off from taking money out of taxpayers' pockets. Orrin Hatch says, well, that's just a cynical game, trying to blame the oil companies. While, and this is where Senator Orrin Hatch shows how crazy he is, he insisted that Democrats intended to raise gasoline prices in order to reduce consumption. Now, when I say he's insane, of course he is. How do the Democrats raise prices on gasoline? How do you do that, Orrin? No, I realize that you don't give a tinker's ass about truth or fact, you cultist freak. But how do Democrats raise the price at the pump in order to get people to reduce consumption? Oh, my God. Not satisfied with making a total ass of himself to normal people, Hatch went on, quote, so while the American people ask Congress to do something about high gas prices, the response of Democrats is to rail against oil executives to mask the fact that their policy is actually to make the price at the pump more painful. Oh, my God. He called the hearing a dog and pony show, which it is, Orrin, but not for the reasons that you insist it is. And he even showed a blown up picture of a dog riding a pony. This is a United States senator. He is a member of a very sick cult, but he's still a U.S. senator. So, time to reframe the issue. Marvin Odom, president of Shell Oil, argued that high oil prices result not from oil companies' greed, but from an ever-changing confluence of political, economic, and climatic factors. So they reframe it. It's not subsidies. It's not the oil companies getting money from taxpayers. No. It's a tax increase. It's a tax increase. It's that socialist Barack Obama. So, Orrin Hatch, apparently the oil company's main whore on this committee, no offense to sex workers, sits there with his thumb in his nose or wherever he likes to put it and says, well, you know, the Democrats, they want to raise the price at the pump. Tell me how that's done, Orrin. Looking for a kitty, gonna look in every corner of the city. Till I'm wheezing like a bus stop, running up the stairs, gonna meet you on the rooftop.
Yeah.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh. 25 before the hour. The Big Five oil companies, $32 billion in profit in the past 3 months, and BP didn't show a profit in the past 3 months. So that means four of them. Now, while these hearings, while these hearings are going on, oh, and by the way, coming up next hour, the other energy predator that is going to get the Malloy treatment is the coal industry. They are invading our schools. Did you know that? You didn't. Coal industry. While all this is going on with the oil executives and and their people in Congress, and by the way, I just had something in front of me here. Where did it go? Let me just find it. Yeah, here it is. Contributions. Political contributions connected to the five oil companies that were testifying before the Senate Finance Committee today. This is over the past decade. BP, $628,000. 33% of that went to Democrats. 65% went to Republicans. Chevron, $1,604,397. 18% went to Democrats. 81% went to Republicans. ConocoPhillips, $1,154,198. 14% went to Democrats. 86% to Republicans. ExxonMobil, $2,609,337, 9.6% to Democrats, 90.4% to Republicans. Shell, $303,000, 27% to Democrats, 73% to Republicans. Now, what does that say other than the fact that the Republican Party is a wholly owned subsidiary of just about every capitalist on the level of these oil companies who can stuff money in their pockets? That's what it says, A. B, what it says is the oil companies also give to Democrats. And the disgusting part is the Democrats take it. Now, I don't see on this list that Reg sent me, I don't see how much Senator Charles Schumer got from the oil industry, but I will guarantee you that it's probably a hefty amount. So for you right-wing pigs who continue to send your drivel into my email, most of which gets kicked out and you get a nasty form letter, why don't you people ever just try to use your brains? Can you still do that after 20 years of filling your head with Rush Limbaugh and 5 years of filling your head with the suicide dude Glenn Beck and 15 years of filling your head with Sean Hannity? Can't you? Maybe you people can no longer think independently or think critically, but why are you so willing? So willing to let these people just smack you around over and over and over again, and you have the audacity to call Obama a socialist when he is doing exactly what the rest of these people are doing, what your Republican punks are doing, and you have the nerve to write to me and call me a communist or a socialist? I'm not a communist, but you're goddamn right I'm a democratic socialist. You betcha. So when you decide to write me your emails like that, just remember the Brer Rabbit story. When Brer Wolf was about to eat him, or was it Brer Bear? And Brer Rabbit said, "No, don't throw me in that briar patch." You don't know what I'm talking about, do you? Of course not. Now, while all this is going on, Shell Oil. Shell Oil is seeking permission to drill 10 exploratory oil wells beneath Alaska's Arctic water. 10. As Clifford Krause in the Times put it about a week ago, or 2 weeks ago, quote, the forbidding ice-clogged region is believed to hold vast reserves of oil, potentially enough to fuel 25 million cars for 35 years. Ooh, now isn't that a fun statistic? Clifford Krause, the writer, forgot to include how much that'll contribute to the global meltdown that this planet is experiencing and how much quicker that will bring about the collective death of everything on Earth. But we do know enough fuel to run 25 million cars for 35 years. Shell has led the way among all the oil companies, working for 5 years now. See, they have long-term plans. 5 years to convince regulators, environmentalists, native Alaskans, and several courts that Shell can manage the process safely. It can protect polar bears. Oh, we're going to protect the bears and other wildlife. Safeguard air quality for residents and respond quickly to any spill in the region. Christ. Now, well, I mean, anybody want to, I don't know, lay some odds about whether or not this particular clutch of capitalist earth murderers will get their way? Of course they will. Are you kidding? I like this sentence. Shell's renewed application will pose a test for President Obama, who promised to put safety first after the BP spill. But he has also reiterated his support for offshore drilling. Barack Obama, a socialist? You dumbass teabag right-wing Republican freaks. You are so stupid. You all ought to be supporting Obama. He's given you everything you want and your corporate masters. But you know the reason you can't support him? Come on. You know why. You know why you can't support him. Right? Exactly. Because you're all racist pigs. That's why. To greater or lesser degrees. And Barack Obama is not totally white. But you dumbasses, you refer to him as all your racist slurs. His mama was white. His daddy wasn't. Oh, you people make me sick. You just turn my stomach. Environmental groups say a spill in the Arctic's inaccessible waters would be more catastrophic than what occurred in the Gulf of Mexico. Republicans, meanwhile, are threatening to exonerate the president for turning his back on energy security if he says no to Shell. Representative Gary Gardner, a Colorado Republican on the House Energy and Commerce Committee, said, quote, Americans are reeling from staggering prices at the pump. So the president has to justify to the American people why we are not replacing Saudi Arabian oil imports with U.S.-produced oil. And, see, nobody will challenge that statement. The oil that comes from the Arctic, if such a thing, well, when such a thing happens, this dumb little cheesy bastard, Cory Gardner, the Colorado Republican, I don't know, what does he envision? That oil is packaged up and sent to gas stations or refineries in the United States? And then after the refineries, it goes immediately to your friendly local gasoline distributor? This is where Republicans demonstrate a kind of political ignorance that says they pander to their sick base and the truth flies out the window. They don't care. Do you think the oil companies want to sell this here in the United States? We're broke! It goes to China. It goes to India. It goes wherever the oil companies dictate, Corey, you half-wit. But the Republican bobbleheads out there listen to old Corey, Corey Gardner, Colorado Republican. They say, yeah, well, that's because Barack Obama is a Negro. Well, okay, he's a socialist from Kenya. That's what he is. Yeah, Corey, you tell him. In the meantime, these half-wits, 5 years from now, they're going to be paying $7 a gallon for gas. It just never stops, does it?
The child is black, the child is white. The whole world looks upon a sight, a beautiful sight. And now a child can understand that this is the law of all the land, all the land. The world is black, the world is white, it turns back.
The full-blown funk window, I must let it be known that blue is boys made the time.
Arm yourself with the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
Well, I can't believe I've seen the day when all our rights will be taken away. Would you have guessed that a little collie weed could ever bring all of these vultures in a bee? What it feels like we're living in a police state.
10 before the hour. So Shell wants to drill 10, count them 10, exploratory oil wells beneath the Arctic water off the coast of Alaska. And they promise, cross your heart and hope to die, that they got everything under control. We really, 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 really do. Nothing bad is going to happen. We swear we're going to manage the drilling process safely. We're going to protect the sweet little polar bears. Aren't they cute? I like the polar bear cubs. Oh, and we're going to make sure that nothing happens to them. Can you imagine a polar bear cub just slicked down with Alaska crude, which is really high sulfur, sticky, nasty, horrible stuff? Wouldn't that be awful? We're not going to let that happen. We're going to safeguard the air quality for residents. We are, and we're going to respond quickly if, God forbid, there's a spill, but there won't be. Brendan Cummings is a senior counsel at the Center for Biological Diversity, you know, one of those good guys, is suing to stop Shell. Now, you'd think, oh, never mind, I almost said you'd think the Justice Department would sue to stop him, but I lost my head there for a moment. Anyway, Brendan Cummings says, quote, if the Obama administration approves drilling in the Arctic, it will demonstrate that they, the Obama administration, have learned nothing from the Gulf spill, end quote. And, of course, officials in Barack Obama's government say only that they will thoroughly review Shell's new proposal. Kendra Barkoff, a spokeswoman for the Interior Department, which oversees most of this process, said, quote, we need to continue to take a cautious approach in the Arctic that is guided by science and the voices of North Slope communities, most of which would be native Alaskans. Now, what do you think native Alaskans have to say about it? Well, they're not all that important. We had Native Americans, too. Remember them? Huh? I guess the Native Alaskan is a Native American. Oh, no, wait a minute. Oh, I don't know. It just gets all so confusing. But like most imperial countries who have sent their white invaders someplace, we usually take a look at the indigenous people and figure out the quickest and least painful to us way to exterminate them. Putting was it smallpox on the blankets? Or was it typhus? Smallpox. That was pretty effective for the Redskins here, right? Now, Alaska is a different story because, you know, it's only been a state for, what, how many years? 40, 50? I don't even know. That long? Okay. Those folks weren't really red men. They look more like, you know, Asians. And, you know, it was so far away, we didn't care. Until, who is it, Secretary of State? Seward? Seward's Folly, that's right. Seward bought Alaska. He did. And I guess when you buy a chunk of land like that, you get everything that comes with it, including the indigenous tribes. So the indigenous tribes, to the extent that they, you know, hunt whales and seal and do they hunt polar bear? Or is that one of their gods? I don't know. I'm displaying my ignorance of native culture where it concerns what we call Alaska. The Inuit culture to me is, just a complete blank. Only what I've seen on the National Geographic Channel, and what I usually see there is the ritual involved in Native Alaskans going out for the hunt. It's a little bit different from big old tough white Americans who arm themselves with semi-automatic weapons and go shoot pheasant or deer. Look what I brought home, Ruby. Now, damn it, chop it up and put it in the freezer. Yeah, they have a different way of doing it. But those people, the Native Alaskans, will be consulted by Shell. Now, wouldn't that be interesting? Wouldn't you love to sit in on a meeting, a tribal council of Native Inuit or Native Alaskans, I should say, sitting in a, a longhouse? With corporate executives or lobbyists from Shell, while the Shell oil people speak to them in pidgin English, we come this land of snow and magic in the sky, magic light, we come to put holes down where powerful energy live, and so we will provide you with many things to make whale easier to catch. Don't you think that's about how it goes? We'll be back after the break. Just stick around. Listeners, this is Mike Malloy. You're listening to an encore presentation of The Mike Malloy Show, so please don't call in. We'll return live before you can say, Bush crime family. Welcome back, 7 past the hour. Yeah, well, before we, you know, I was going to avoid all this tonight, but what the hell. Regarding Arnold Schwarzenegger, now former governor of California, acknowledging that he fathered a child with a member of his household staff. Oh, my goodness. Shades of Strom Thurmond. My goodness. Like I said last night, you know, I hate to deal with these kinds of stories. Last night it was the head of the IMF fund and his alleged rape. Now, and before that, we have Newt Gingrich parading around. A paragon of virtue, you know his story. And before that, of course, we had John Ensign. And before that, we had, this just goes on and on. Yeah, there have been a couple of Democrats in there, sure. But, you know, there's a good suggestion. Republicans should focus a little more on their members' penises than on women's uteruses, you know, don't you think? I mean, that's all Republicans want to control is a woman's sexual apparatus with all their you know, little claims to be interested in preserving life. Oh, hog snot. But look, you Republican lawmakers, little less attention perhaps on what women are about and the privacy of their decisions. And maybe a little bit less attention on what gay people or people who are gay might be doing, and focus on your heterosexual members' penises, the male penises, because they seem to be getting your party into an awful lot of hypocrisy lately, wouldn't you say? Huh? But Schwarzenegger, I just. How do you marry a man who has a child? How long have they been married? 7 years? No. How long have they been married? Anybody know?
Longer than that, Mike.
20 years?
Oh yeah.
That long?
It's been a long time.
Oh. So he had the child 10 years ago when they were married. in an interview yesterday before Schwarzenegger issued a statement, the former staffer said another man, her husband at the time, was the child's father. When the LA Times later informed the woman of the governor's statement, she declined to comment further. The woman was trying to cover up for Arnold. I don't know. It's just a damn shame. It's a damn shame that all these kids have to go through this. It really is. Yeah, okay. Here it says Schwarzenegger and Shriver announced they were splitting up after 25 years of marriage. Has it been that long? 25. Boy, time just rips by when you're keeping close tabs on the political and media elite in this country, right? Huh? Schwarzenegger issued a statement at LA Times, also sent to the AP early this morning. Quote, after leaving the governor's office, I told my wife about this event, which occurred over a decade ago. I understand and deserve the feelings of anger and disappointment among my friends and family. There are no excuses, and I take full responsibility for the hurt I have caused. I have apologized to Maria, my children, my family. I'm truly sorry. I asked that the media, the next sentence, or the next beginning of the sentence is ludicrous. I ask that the media respect, please, Governor. I ask that the media respect my wife and children through this extremely difficult time. While I deserve your attention and criticism, my family does not. End of statement. So the woman tried, up to the last minute, tried to cover up, protect Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, a little more attention, guys, on your penises, and a little bit less on women's uteruses, you think? AJ the Music Factory had a comment about this. I won't be back. That's the subject line. Mike, the cases of hypocrisy and double standards are really piling up, aren't they? So all the while, Schwarzenegger was in office, acting the part of one who was beyond reproach. He was in a situation that, had the people of California known about, might never have put him there to begin with. The issue of lying or concealing facts in order to gain or maintain an office ought not to be a partisan one. Yet, I cannot help notice how many Democratic politicians have been raked over the coals for the ways in which they have conducted themselves, while the Red Menace can have, say, three spouses and run for president, reacting with indignation when they're even questioned. Oh, that would be Newt. Or father children out of wedlock. Or aid a fellow senator in concealing an affair from constituents. Or. I recently heard a pundit comment on Gingrich's situation, asserting that the public is not as bothered by this as it used to be. You know why? Because of all the Democrats who were torched over a double standard that shouldn't even be a single standard, paving a way of relative tolerance and taking the walk of shame the Red Menace seems frequently to be successful in avoiding. Personal lives of politicians shouldn't even be a factor in elections. Well, I tend to disagree with that, AJ. But oh, how interesting it is to see that standard morph, spasming and sputtering like one of those magic snakes, as the color of an aspiring or current office holder goes from blue to red. Meanwhile, the president, who truly is an example of family values, if you care about that bogus concept, the president gets zero acknowledgments for it. Oh, well, bring in the next contestant, please. Better dead than red, the Music Factory. Yeah, the only thing, I tend to disagree, AJ. I think a person's personal life should be a consideration when seeking, you know, a political office, because how they conduct themselves in person or in their personal lives, I think, will be reflected, won't it, in how they conduct themselves in public life. Somebody who's a sneak, a cheat, a liar, a thief, a debaucher, there's an old word, in his or her private life is going to be that way in a public life. How could they not? So, well, I agree with everything in your letter, AJ. I think that a candidate's personal life should be a matter for consideration. But that's just me. What a shame. Well, at least, you know, the right wing should be celebrating the fact that Arnold didn't insist on an abortion, huh? Oh, my goodness, my goodness, my goodness. Well, you know, the end of the world is coming in a couple of days, but we have a pre-event that is unfolding in, of all places, Australia. I'll share that with you when we come back.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
So I remember that song. When did that song come out, Kathy? Was that in the 70s? Came out about the same time that Arnold and Maria got married. Oh, it's just so hard not to be an absolute cynical bastard these days, isn't it? Huh? I don't know. Well, anyway... The rapture is upon us, and when's it coming? Saturday? Was this Tuesday? Oh my God, not much time left. We need to get rid of the dog and run up our charge cards. You know, the two we have left. We ought to run up it's rapture time, man. Nobody, you know. Of course, on the other hand, why run up your charge cards? What are you going to do? You can't take anything with you, not even your rings. You will float up totally naked. I like my idea from last night. Just go to your favorite church Saturday night. Scatter around little piles of clothing so that when people come to church on Sunday, oh no, we missed it. Well, anyway, in Australia, there's a couple there. The guy's name is Alan John Miller, and the woman's name is Mary Suzanne Luck. And they claim to be Jesus and Mary Magdalene. Cult watchers are keeping a close eye on this pair. They have a title. They call themselves Divine Truth, and they claim to be the second coming of Jesus and Mary Magdalene. On his website, of course, Alan John Miller says, quote, "Just a little over 2,000 years ago, we arrived on the earth for the first time. Because of my personal desire and passion for God as I grew, I recognized not only that I was the Messiah and was foretold by ancient prophets, but also that I was in a process designed by God that all humans should follow, if they so desired," end quote. Alan John Miller is 47, and Mary Suzanne Luck is 32. They have drawn in between 30 and 40 disciples since moving to the Wilkesdale region of Queensland in 2007. That's according to a newspaper, the Courier Mail. Alan John Miller told his followers, quote, "I don't want to be Jesus. Who wants to be Jesus? But I love the divine truth." Oh, man. Australia has a center called the Cult Awareness and Information Center. So both that organization and the Anglican and Catholic churches are concerned that the couple appeals to the vulnerable. Well, that's what the Anglican and Catholic churches do. Well, they see it as competition, right? Oh, no! The Cult Awareness and Information Center spokeswoman told the newspaper, quote, "The moment someone becomes God or God's voice on earth, it gives them another level of authority to enforce submission to them." Well, no kidding, but that's what the Catholic Church does, Cult Awareness and Information Center spokeswoman. That's what they all do, especially the Catholic Church. So now the Catholic Church in Australia has got its robes in a wad because of this couple? Anyway, divine reincarnation or not, this couple has worked wonders for local real estate. Well, of course. Alan John Miller and Mary Suzanne Luck's move to Wilkesdale reportedly sparked an unlikely property boom, as their followers aggressively purchased much of the surrounding land. But why? That's what the Catholic Church does. A couple of years ago, followers pooled together $400,000, Aussie dollars, I guess, to purchase roughly 1 square mile of land. That's a big old chunk of land, where they currently hold weekly meetings and plan to build an international visitor center. Ah, I see. It's about the money, which is just like the Catholic Church and the Anglican Church and the rest of these mega religious organizations. But I always find it extremely funny when you see a line that says the Anglican and Catholic churches are concerned that this couple appeals to the vulnerable, that their message, we are the incarnation of God on earth, that somehow that appeals to the vulnerable. What was it Stephen Hawking said, this quote is saying the other day, that religion is for people who are afraid of the dark? We'll be right back. All you want, and sometimes I do on the air, but there's nothing like having some good old country gospel like that and kick back, have a great big old glass of Jack Black, a few ice cubes tinkling in that beautiful colored liquor, sitting on the back porch here in the South on a summer evening, watching the fireflies and can you play a little bit more of that just for a second, Kathy? Do you have some more of that? I just started there at the beginning again. It just
for me. Then you came along and completed my life.
Amen.
I saw Jesus and Daddy in your loving eyes.
There you go. Song. I just love that. I love that song. Sometimes I just, it just reminds me when I was being partly raised by my grandma. Now, she wouldn't have been real thrilled with that song because, you know, singing and making music were tools of the devil, but she probably would have gone for the lyrics if it could have been presented to her with no music. 3 men in my life who've always been true, Jesus, my daddy, and you. You gotta love that. You gotta just love it. Where were we? I'm sorry. See, you shouldn't play that music, Kathy. That just, that summertime Jack Black music in Georgia. America held hostage. Remember that? Paul Krugman had a column, was it today, yesterday, where he's talking about how 6 months ago, our benighted President Obama faced a hostage situation. Remember that? Huh? You don't? Yeah, Republicans threatened to block an extension of middle-class tax cuts unless Obama gave in and extended the tax cuts for the rich, too. This was the plan 10 years ago. This is when Bush and Cheney instituted these tax cuts and destroyed the economy. They set it up so that 10 years out, when they were supposed to sunset, they wouldn't, because they knew that the Republican operatives could start screaming and convulsing all over media. The media would help them about raising taxes, class warfare. So it worked. Anyway, Obama gave in, as he always does, on everything, and extended the tax cuts for the rich. And what that gets down to is what, what's his name? You got to know when to hold them. Kenny Rogers, you know when to fold them. The president essentially folded, and he gave the Republicans everything they wanted. It was very simple. So the Republicans learned a lesson. Hostage takers, when they, you know, when taking hostages works, right? Why not take more hostages? That's pretty simple. That's what Oliver North proved when the Iranian hostage takers, if you want to refer to them that way, back in 1979, grabbed employees of the American embassy and held them for over a year. It was Reagan and Oliver North and all those operatives who worked in the Reagan White House who were saying out of their mouths, you don't ever deal with hostages. And back behind the scenes, Oliver North, a traitorous bastard to this country and the Marine Corps, Oliver North was trading TOW missiles. He was giving the Iranians TOW missiles in exchange for a hostage here, a hostage there, and he was selling them to them so that he could then funnel the money to the CIA organization known as the Contras down in Nicaragua. It was very confusing, right? Most Americans just, I don't want to hear about it. La, 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 la. Don't want to hear about it. Don't want to hear about it. Anyway, hostage takers learn a very quick lesson. If it works, it works. Now the hostage takers, the Republicans, are back. This time, the Republicans say they will refuse to raise the debt ceiling. Now, the average American goes, well, what's that? I don't know what that is. I don't care. Was it debt? I don't want any more debt. La, 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 la. Did you hear about Arnold Schwarzenegger? They will refuse to raise the debt ceiling unless Obama agrees to large spending cuts and no tax increases whatsoever. So the question becomes, as Krugman points out, what, if anything, will get the president to say no to this latest blackmail? I think you and I both know that he will give in. Of course he will. I mean, look at his record. Look at Obama's record. So, the debt ceiling itself, as Krugman points out, is a strange feature of U.S. law. Since Congress must vote to authorize spending and choose tax rates, why have a second vote on whether to allow the borrowing that these spending and taxation policies imply? Right? If we are set up to borrow all kinds of money, why have a limit on how much money we can borrow? I mean, and votes. I guess the limit is because it's just like the credit bureaus will take a look at your income to debt ratio and say, I'm sorry, you can't afford to finance that new car because you owe X and you only make Y. And if you go Z, then we go in the tank. So we're not, you know, no. All right. So we have a debt ceiling, but the policies, as Krugman pointed out, when was it, last week? What the U.S. government is, pretty much, is a finance company that has an army you know, it takes care of Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. They finance it. And they also have an army. Now, well, more than an army, a huge military. So with those four aspects, those four components, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and a militarized economy that is so massive that our militarized component of this economy is equivalent to all other military budgets on the globe combined, and then some. But it's apparently still not enough. We have to have more, 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 more. So what's going to be cut? Interesting question. Now, what has changed? It used to be that when the debt ceiling would be reached, the Congress would say, okay, we've got to raise it. Well, the answer is the Republican Party has become Stalinesque. As Krugman says, normally a party controlling neither the White House nor the Senate would acknowledge that it isn't in a position to impose its agenda on the nation. But the Republicans don't believe in following rules. So what will happen if the ceiling isn't raised? Well, a lot of stuff, I guess. It's become fashionable, Krugman points out, on the right to assert that it would be no big deal. On Saturday, the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal ridiculed those worried about the consequences of hitting the ceiling as the Armageddon lobby. The Armageddon lobby. No, no, no. Those are the people that are predicting that on Saturday, the rapture. Oh, it gets so confusing. Anyway, it's hard to know whether the what, us worry types really believe what they're saying or whether they're just staking out a bargaining position. But in any case, they're almost surely wrong. Krugman says seriously bad consequences will follow if the debt ceiling isn't raised. Well, that kind of makes sense, I guess. This is the game capitalism plays on us and the whole world. Why are we so far in debt to begin with? Because the rich insist on stealing billions upon hundreds upon thousands of billions of dollars. And, of course, $1,000 billion is a trillion. The rich are doing this. They're stealing everything they can get their goddamn hands on and the stuff that isn't nailed down. And they're showing up with crowbars to pry up the stuff that is nailed down. So what's going to happen if we hit the debt ceiling, which I don't want to tell you this, but we kind of hit it yesterday. But Krugman wrote this, I don't know, a couple days ago. What will happen if, when, now that we hit the debt ceiling? Well, I'll try to tell you when we come back. I'm trying to get this in my head myself, so be patient. Krugman's column, America Held Hostage, about the debt ceiling, why that's important. We hit it yesterday, I think, which means Congress has to raise the debt ceiling or the U.S. is not going to be able to pay its debts. Very simple. And if we don't pay our debts, what happens then? Well, what the Republicans have been counting on since the Reagan era was that when we get to the point where we can't hit our pay our debts and the entire economy collapses and it can be rebuilt along Christian capitalist fascist model, that says, you know, no public money for anything. If you can afford to eat your bootstraps, or is it pull yourself up by your bootstraps, okay. But if not, then you may die and go to heaven or hell, depending on how you lived your life. So that's what they're counting on, is a total unsustainable collapse of the U.S. economy. This is what Republicans have been hoping for about the past, well, for a long time, but especially for the past 30 years, ever since 1980. If we hit the debt ceiling, as Krugman points out, the government will be forced to stop paying roughly a third of its bills, because that's the share of spending currently financed by borrowing. Right? Okay. So, is the government going to stop sending out Social Security checks? Teabaggers, hey, you teabag freaks, no more money, no more money. Will it stop paying doctors and hospitals that treat Medicare patients? Hey, you folks over 65 that just insist on voting Republican so that, I don't know what, the queers can't get married? Whatever your reason is, guess what? When you go in to have that coronary bypass, they're going to kick your ass out on the street, and then you're going to die. Huh? How about that? Yes, you will. But if you've lived your life the way you're supposed to, you'll immediately go see Jesus. Woo! Will the government stop paying the contractors supplying fuel and munitions to our military? Now, that's always a Republican issue. Oh, they're abandoning the military! Those dirty Democrats, they're abandoning the military! Well, it looks like it's Republicans that are planning to abandon the military. Now, you can say what you like about the military, and God knows I say a lot about an anti-militarist stance on this program, but my goodness, we have how many soldiers in how many countries? How many, half a million? A million scattered around the globe on how many bases? And all of a sudden, no pay for you! No pay for you! And to the guys and gals who are in actually, they're in actual shooting wars, and you and I don't know how many of those there are, no pay for them, no bullets. Well, there's always Blackwater. There's always Dime Corps. There's always the private war contractors, which is another thing that the proto-fascist Republicans are hoping for. So anyway, will it stop paying interest on the debt? Will the government stop paying interest on the debt? Now, if we stop paying interest on the debt, uh-oh, that means our economy collapses, because that means we won't be able to borrow anymore. What happens if you stop paying your credit card bill, if you stop paying your mortgage, if you stop paying your car payment? You know what will happen. So what happens if the U.S. government stops paying its debt? Remember, the Krugman pointed out, the federal government is basically an insurance company with an army. And he just described in his column all the major components of federal spending: Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, and the military. Now, at least one and maybe two, possibly three of those components will face payment stoppages if federal borrowing is cut off. And what would such payment stops do to the economy? Boom. Consumer spending will crash. Nervous seniors will start wondering how to pay for rent and food, not to mention that coronary bypass that they got to have if they want to keep living. Or they can be like Dick Cheney and have government insurance and go have half their goddamn heart removed and have a funnel put in. Don't have to bother with heartbeat anymore if you're Dick Cheney.
Heartbeat? I don't need a heartbeat. Who needs a heartbeat? I've got really good insurance. It's paid for by you dumbasses out. Excuse me. I meant to say dumb F's out there who, you know, pay for this. You've always paid for it. I've never had a job. I've always been on the public dole. And that's a Bob Dole joke there. I've always been on the public dole, and I'll continue to be. I don't need a heart. I don't need insurance. I damn sure don't need a bypass operation. I have a machine now. That just kind of the blood in one end and out the other, so to speak, if you will. What, time to go? All right.
Furthermore, if the debt ceiling isn't raised, Businesses that depend on government purchases, that's a lot of them, would slash payrolls, cancel investments. Markets might panic, especially if interest payments are missed. And the consequences of undermining faith in U.S. debt? That might be especially severe because debt plays a crucial role in many financial transactions. Don't forget, every time the Fed prints money, it's printing IOUs. IOUs are debt. That money you have in your pocket, money I have in my pocket, meaningless. It's debt. That's all it is. Read your dollar bill. You know, I was a kid growing up, it used to say, except for the ones. I think the ones didn't say this, but all other denominations says it was backed by silver. They were silver certificates. Remember that? What? Is the show over? Oh, no! I've got more. All right, well, maybe we can pick up on it tomorrow, right? It's just been just a chock-a-block news day. You know what I'm saying? All right, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.